Let's read Daniel, Daniel chapter 3, and beginning from verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, and his breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in a plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sekhabut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. And whoso falleth not down and worship shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Therefore at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sekhabut, psaltery, and all kind of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Wherefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sekhabut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worship, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men unto the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake, and he said unto them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that ye do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sekhabut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kind of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hand?" Boy, I could sit and let somebody read to me that story many times over. It's such an enjoyable story to read. And you know, I think one of the best stories to read to children, you know, when they are young, is the stories from the Bible, because it's so real and it's so fresh and it's so appealing to the heart to see the faithfulness of God. And there was historically some men, boys, girls, who were faithful to God, and God had promised to take care of them, and indeed He did. Now, before we go into chapter 3 this evening, I want to remind us a few things that I think are very important. When we have covered chapter 2, you remember one of the things that was really important for us to learn in chapter 2 was the course of history, chapter 2 of the book of Daniel, we have learned about the times of the Gentiles. This is such an important chapter, alongside chapter 7 in the book of Daniel, which we are going to speak about it as time goes on. It is essential for us to get a hold. Chapter 2 gives us the times of the Gentiles. This great image that Nebuchadnezzar had dreamt, and he could not find out, or he could not know what was the meaning, what was God telling him, until the time when Daniel came in, and Daniel gave him not only the interpretation, but first of all, he told him what he had dreamed, and then he had given him the interpretation. And basically what we have learned, if you remember from chapter 2, is three things. Number one, we learn that the times of the Gentiles, we go through four different empires, the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Greek, and the Romans. Four different empires will take over this long period of time from the beginning of the Jewish people, Judah, being taken to Babylon, 605 or 586 BC, all the way till the time when the Messiah, Yeshua, Jesus, the Messiah of Israel, will come again and establish the Messianic kingdom. That we saw the stone that fell on the toes, and I want to remind you that the stone that fell did not fall on the head, not on the chest, not on the belly and the thigh, not on the leg, but on the 10 toes, on the feet, which suggests that the course of the four empires through the time of the Gentiles going to have to take its course all the way to the end before the Messiah going to come and establish the Messianic kingdom. This is very important to see where the stone fell upon. It fell upon the 10 toes, represent the future revival of the Roman Empire, which will have an end at the second coming of our blessed Lord Yeshua the Messiah. So this is the first lesson that we learn when we study chapter 2. Secondly, we learn that the time of the Gentiles will come to an end when? At the second coming of the Messiah. So the first point, it's going to go through four different stages or empires, the time of the Gentile, but it's going to come to an end at the second coming of the Messiah, not at the first coming. He came once, the Messiah came to die, to give his life a ransom for many. He's the one that Isaiah the prophet says prophetically of the future remnant of Israel, who will say, all we like sheep have gone astray, each one have turned to his own way, but the Lord laid upon him, this is the Messiah, the iniquity of us all. That was the first coming. But the second coming, he's going to come, as Revelation 19 tells us, that he's going to come as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, no longer to suffer and to die, but he's going to come to rule and to reign and to judge this world in righteousness. Now the third thing that we have learned before we close that second chapter is that the Jewish people, though they're going to be cast and dispersed, they are still going to have in many ways high level of position in various kingdoms. And we have seen it, beloved, throughout the history of the times of the Gentiles, that somehow by divine design, God still gave his earthly people, the Jewish people, certain positions in these kingdoms, throughout the whole four kingdoms. And like we learn in the book of Daniel, in chapter 2, where we have closed last time, if you remember, the king Nebuchadnezzar, in verse 46, fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel and commanded that they should offer oblation and sweet odor unto him. And verse 47, the king answered unto Daniel, and he said, of the truth it is that your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and the revealer of secrets, seeing you could reveal this secret. Then the king made Daniel a great man. It is interesting. Here's the king. He had elevated Daniel and placed him in a high place now, because by divine design, God had allowed that to be so. But you know, it is so beautiful also to learn about Daniel here, is that Daniel, at the end of chapter 2, did not forget his friends. You know how we are like that? When things are well with us, we have an inclination to say, who cares about those friends of mine, and who cares about these, and who cares? You remember Joseph, when he interpreted the dream to Potiphar, who was in jail with him, the baker and the butler, you remember? And he said to the one, in 3 days, your head will be lifted up, and you will be restored. To the other one, he says, your head going to be lifted up, but you're going to die, you're going to be hanged. And then when God have fulfilled this promise, the chief butler, he have gone to King Pharaoh, and for 2 years he forgot Joseph. Joseph told him, remember me when things are well with you. He forgot Joseph. He had been restored, had been elevated, and he left Joseph in jail for 2 years, until one day somehow something happened and the king needed some help with interpretation of dream. Then this butler remembered Joseph, Yosef, and then he actually called Yosef, and Yosef came and he helped King Pharaoh to interpret the dream that he had with the, if you remember, with the 7 fat and 7 skinny cows and 7 sheaves of wheat, and the other 7 that are skinny and fat, you remember? But he remembered him. But Daniel did not forget his friend. Notice what it said at the end of the chapter 2 where we have closed. Then Daniel requested of the king that he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. And that's how we closed last time our ministry meeting, as we have been occupied with the times of the Gentiles that we go through over a very long period of time, which will culminate or will end with the second coming of the Lord Jesus the Messiah. The stone which fell upon the toes and destroyed completely the whole image, which was made out of gold, out of silver, out of bronze, out of iron, and out of iron and clay mixed together. Today, beloved, we are going to start in chapter 3. And it's very interesting that as we are starting in chapter 3, notice how this chapter began. I think it's fantastic to see how this chapter began. Chapter 3 began with an interesting thing. Verses 1 to 7 is the first section of chapter 3, and I want you to notice how the chapter begins. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold. Now let's just stop here for a second. Now why in the world King Nebuchadnezzar would make an image of gold, totally of gold, and why would he make an image altogether? Well, I would like to suggest that King Nebuchadnezzar perhaps have made now the very same image that he thought about, or in his dream that he was dreaming, just the chapter before, if you will. For us it was a chapter, but for them it must have been taking some time. And he now, after he received the interpretation from Daniel, what did Daniel tell him? King Nebuchadnezzar, God is telling you concerning events that are going to occur throughout the time of the Gentiles. God wants to tell you how things are going to proceed in the future day. You are the head, another kingdom is going to come after you, which will be the belly and the chest and the hand, and then another one, the belly and the thigh, and then another kingdom which will be the legs and the feet and the toes.
you are of gold, then the second kingdom going to be of silver, the third kingdom of bronze, and the fourth kingdom of metal, of iron. Well, King Nebuchadnezzar, even though in chapter 2 he came to say, he said of a truth, your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings. Apparently, Nebuchadnezzar was not satisfied with what God's instruction through Daniel was given unto him. And so he's building this great, huge image. But you know what he does? He doesn't build it out of these four metals. He made it out of gold. And guess why gold? Because Nebuchadnezzar did not want to accept the fact that there is another kingdom coming after him, so his kingdom will have an end. So what does he do? He makes not only the head out of gold, also the chest, the belly, and the thigh, the legs, the feet, the whole image completely out of gold. Whether it was a pure gold or overlaid with gold, I leave it for you to find out. But I can assure you, beloved brothers and sisters, that this man by the name of Nebuchadnezzar, though he expressed his, your God, of the truth it is the God, he is the God of gods and Lord of kings, he never yet came to a point to acknowledge that your God is the only God, is the only true God. There are many gods, you see, he's saying, and your God is the God of those gods. But he haven't yet come to acknowledge that the God of Daniel is the only God. So he's building this great image, and notice what he says in verse 1, as he, Nebuchadnezzar, responds to his dream, then we say he built such a huge image. He made an image out of gold. It says that the height of it was 70 cubits, and the breadth of it was 6 cubits. That's about 90 feet high. Some suggest even more. And about 9 feet wide. It must have been a humongous image. You couldn't walk from far. You couldn't walk wherever you were walking. You will be able to see that huge image. And you know what he was really saying is simply that. When he was building that, I mean, you can read it between the lines. I am not intent to have an end to my kingdom. I am not intend to give my kingdom over to another nation. I am the king, and I'm going to remain a king, and therefore I'm going to build that humongous image that everybody will recognize that this is the image that is representing really me, and also I'm going to make it totally out of gold, which really is saying I'm not going to be making that image which will represent the future kingdom. And so notice what he does by the way, this is a complete self-will. That is complete self-will. This is simply self-will, and he wants to, it is pride. It's really pride. It's really a pride that Nebuchadnezzar, you can see the heart of Nebuchadnezzar being represented by his action. By his action. And so in verse 2, the call for all government members to the dedication. Notice, up to now, you hear only the word dedication. And it says in verse 2, then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, sent to gather together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs even, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. By the way, you notice, up to verse 2, we don't even talking about worship here. It's only like a dedication. It sounds like a very nice thing. You know, sometimes you would go to a city in the United States or in Canada, and they're going to have a certain tower or a certain building or a certain even an image. We have in Niagara on the Lake, there's an image of Bernard Shaw, and there's a dedication. You know, it sounds very harmless. It sounds very, you know, it's only a dedication. And so there's no problem. All of us have gone to various dedication, dedication of this building, dedication of this meeting room, dedication of... There's not so much a problem with dedication. But you can see what he leads to. He's not intending to have only a dedication. He is intending to have all his, those people who subordinate to him, he's intending that all of them are eventually are going to worship that particular image, which really, when you think about it, in light of chapter 2, really represent himself, even though it's not worded here. And so now in verse 3, notice what we find out in verse 3, then the princes and the governors and the captains and the judges and the treasurers and the counselors and the sheriffs and all the rulers of the province were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Now remember, all these people are the people in the government. Those are the leaders of the Babylonians. If you just remember what we just read at the end of chapter 2 in verse 49, that Daniel requested of the king to set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. So we know that that will include the three friends. Oftentimes we find him Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We know their Hebrew name, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, their Hebrew name. They were included in the event of the dedication of that particular image. Now again, I want you to remember, there is not a problem with the dedication. Up to this point, everything is fine. Well, everybody is gathering in verses 2 and 3. And verses 4, 5, and 6 now, there's a command. It was an appeal, first of all, for everyone to come for the dedication, but now in verses 4 to 6, there is a command not only to come to dedicate the image, but this time to fall down and to worship the image. And so we read in verse 4, then a herald cried aloud, to you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at that time, or at what time, ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sekhbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kind of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. And you see, right now you find out that Nebuchadnezzar had in mind not only to have a special celebration, to have an image and dedicate it. Now he is really having in mind and a command, giving a command that now not only they are coming there to just celebrate about this great image, but now everybody is responsible to fall down and to worship that image the moment that they are hearing all kind of musical instruments, such as cornet and flute and harp and so on, psaltery, and such a musical sounding. And you know how up to date it is, you know, unfortunately, with all the music that's going on these days. Like, I'm not speaking about that which honor the Lord. There's so much music that will become like a noise with what's going on, with the music that the world somehow suggests and give us, even believers. Many times we get so, when you hear the sound of the music, it's like almost like it gets you into that mood of going out of yourself and completely like throwing you into all kind of feeling. And you know, you can see that it's nothing new, because it's already in those days. You have this thing here. And so now he's giving to them in verse 6, there is a warning. Whosoever falleth not down and worship shall the same hour be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. You see, there is a warning now that you not only voluntarily make a decision when you, if you like, to worship or not, but here there is a command. If you are not going to worship, look what is going to happen to you. You are going to be cast into the burning fiery furnace. Now, the thought is interesting, is that this command that was given, you know, for the people of Babylon to worship many gods, I mean, it's not a problem. I mean, well, you worship one god, then you can worship the other god, and you worship another god, and you worship another god. So it's not so much a problem for the Babylonian, but for the Jewish people, it is a big problem, because God had given strictly instruction for the people of Israel not to worship any other god. And so now, notice this, in verse 7 it says here, therefore at that time, when the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sekhmut, psaltery, and all kind of music, all the people, the nation, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set. The vast majority of the nation had a multitude of gods, and they can worship this god and worship this god. It's not a problem. We can worship this image or worship that image. What's the difference? But for the people of Israel, for the Jewish people, it was a great, great problem. And as we are going to enter now into the next verses, I want you to understand that God, as we have been singing in our earlier songs, God sometimes takes his people through testing. God is sometimes, by way of maturing and blessing his people and testing them to find out their faithfulness towards him, sometimes he takes his people through various tests. And you know, they just finished chapter 1, where they were commanded to eat all kind of food, and they God had taken them through this test, and he helped them there. Now we find out that these boys that have been taken captives from Judea, now they are going to go through a second test. And so in verse 8 to verse 12, there is accusation against these Jewish boys. First of all, there is accusation by the Chaldeans. In verse 8, therefore at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. Now I want you to pause with me for a minute. This word, accuse the Jews, is a repeated history that has been throughout the ages. We know it happened before that time, and it happened after that time. Now why would they accuse the Jews? Just think with me for a minute. Remember what happened. In chapter 1, these Jewish men, were taken captive from Judea. They were nobodies in the Babylonian kingdom. They were nothing. Here you take those boys, bring them down to Babylon, now they become in a great position. Now they have such a position that they have received, as we have said, that we have read verses 48 and 49. Daniel became a great man, and his friends became, as it says there, they were over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Do you know what that does to a person who is local? It makes him jealous and unhappy. And this is exactly, beloved brothers and sisters, what really happened. They were jealous over these Jewish men who have received a position. Now it could be Jewish, could be non-Jewish, it doesn't matter. But here in the story, it just simply happened about these Jewish boys. And it's interesting that they were seeking an opportunity to accuse them. And I can assure you, they were trying to find some time to accuse them all along. Now came an opportunity to accuse these young men, and here we're going to catch the opportunity. And notice what happened. And really, when you think about it, what is it to them whether these Jewish boys will worship or not worship? Why are they bothering them? The command was given. They had to do what they had to do. Why does it bother them what other person does? Ah, yeah. But really, behind the scenes, they wanted to find an opportunity to put an end to the position that these boys have had. And so we find out in verse 8, the accusation against the Jews, well, for at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. In verse 9, they addressed to the king Nebuchadnezzar, it's they spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. O king, live forever. This expression is oftentimes mentioned in the book of Daniel, in the book of Nehemiah, and so on. O king, live forever. It is, in a sense, a word of respect that they have given to the king. And in verse 10 it says here, notice the reminder, they're reminding him of the decree.
thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sekhabut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. You see, they come to him and they're first of all reminding him, didn't you say that, King Nebuchadnezzar? That he, of course, will say, oh, sure, I said that. He said it earlier in verse 6, whosoever will not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And so they are reminding the king, didn't you say this? You see, so in other words, this is so evil, is remember, king, you said it, and you better act upon it. This is the one side. And the other side is they are going to remind it because they have something in mind that they want to say to the king. You know, it reminds me of Adam. You know what, when God told him, what have you done? When he ate of the fruit, you know what he did? He blamed God and the woman in the same shot. The woman whom you have given me, she did it, and I took it. See what he does? He blamed God and the wife that God had given. In other words, God, you were not kind and good enough. Look what you have given me. In fact, God had given the woman as a helpmeet. And he, instead of saying, God, thank you, and what does he do? He passed the buck, and he blamed God at the same time. Well, that's what they're doing here. They're very smart, very cunning. Didn't you, King Nebuchadnezzar, make this kind of remark? We just want to remind you, but now we're going to tell you why we are reminding you of the command that you have given. Notice that it says, in verse 11, it says here, and whoso falleth not down and worship that he should be cast into the midst of the burning furnace fire. Remember this, King Nebuchadnezzar? And of course he says, sure I remember. And so now, in verse 12, the accusation itself. And you know, it is a threefold accusation in this verse 12. Number one, the Jews do not regard you, king. Notice verse 12, first of all he says, there are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. Now I want you to see the way it is written, beloved. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of this province of Babylon. You shouldn't have. Look at the problem. You have given them an elevated position, and look now what happened. They don't regard you, and you shouldn't have placed them in this position. That's number one. Secondly, the Jews do not serve the gods of Nebuchadnezzar. He says, they serve not thy gods. You see, King Nebuchadnezzar, not only that they do not regard you, King Nebuchadnezzar, these same Jews who you are set in such a higher position, they don't even regard your gods. And thirdly, he says in the same verse, he says the Jews do not worship the image that the king had set up. At the end of verse 12, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Threefold accusation. They don't regard you. That's number one. Secondly, they do not worship your gods. Thirdly, they do not fall down and worship the image which you have set up. They covered all bases. And remember what they, first of all, they say, you are the one who set them up, King Nebuchadnezzar. In other words, what they are really saying, you shouldn't have set them up over us. And so now, the good question is, why they didn't fall down and worship the worship the image. Turn to Exodus chapter 20, verse 1 to 6. The Ten Commandments that had been given to the people of Israel at Mount Sinai. God said to Israel, and God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and the fourth generations of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto the thousandth of them that love me and keep my commandments.
Very interesting, you know, when I think about how sad, sometimes it's really, when you think about how sad that man can come to a point that he worship all kind of idols, all kind of things that are made by men, that are, in other words, they can't move, they can't see, they can't hear, they can't walk, they can't do anything, and yet people would fall down and all their face to the ground to worship those images. And what distinguished the people of Israel from all other nations on the face of this earth is simply this, that they have worshipped the true and living God. They have been taken, our people, out of Egypt. Our people have been taken from bondage. They have been taken from slavery in order to be a nation that worshipped the true and living God, to be a testimony to the God, the true and living God. But unfortunately, Israel had failed. And these Jewish boys were in Babylon not because that the nation had been faithful, but because God had to judge the nation of Israel, because Israel had forgotten what God had done for them. And those statements, look at this, that we have just read in Exodus chapter 20, thou shalt not make unto thee, verse 4, any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, and that is on earth beneath, nor anything underneath the water. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God. God is a jealous God. And God wanted his people to be different, not to worship those idols that see not, that hear not, and that cannot speak, cannot do anything. And how men, intelligent men, and when I'm speaking men, I mean people, can come to this point and do so. If you remember, by the way, just later on, after God had given Israel the Ten Commandments, when Moses went up to bring tablets down, before he even came down, Israel broke already the first commandment, thou shalt have no other God before me. So Moses could not bring the Ten Commandments into the midst of the camp, because if he would have bring the Ten Commandments into the midst of the camp, Israel would be totally consumed. So he broke it right at the foot of the mount. And that's the reality, is this. And you know, brothers and sisters, you read the book of Romans, we study Romans, Romans chapter 1, and so on. People are still doing the same thing. Instead of worshipping the true and living God, instead of recognizing the Messiah, the Lord Jesus, who loves us and gave himself for us, they would worship all kind of things, all kind of images, all kind of man-made gods. And God will not share his glory with another. And so that the interesting thing, that they was a reason why those three young Jewish men did not fall down to worship this image. And you notice now, in verse 8 to 12, we have the accusation against these Jewish boys, Jewish men. Now, in verse 13 to verse 18, notice the testimony of these Jewish young men. First of all, in verse 13 to 15, he asked those three boys, instead of immediately judging them, he gave them kind of a chance. So in verse 13, we first of all see that he was in rage. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. He was furious. Why? Because he gave the command earlier, as we have read it in verse 6, that whosoever falleth not down and worship, the same hour will be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. But here he discovered that there were these individuals, Jewish boys, who did not. So he was furious. In other words, his authority was in doubt. He gave a command and someone did not obey that command. So in verse 14 now, notice Nebuchadnezzar charged these Jewish boys and he said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that ye do not serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up?" You notice he wanted to know if it's true. Remember, he placed them in that position as the ones that are going to be over the affairs of the province of Babylon. So he wanted to hear from them, is it true that you have not bowed to that image and worshipped them? He wanted to hear. It's twofold. When he asked, is it true, in verse 14 he said, that ye, number one, do not serve my gods. Number two, you do not worship my golden image. He's asking them those twofold questions. And so in verse 15 now, Nebuchadnezzar give them a second chance. If ye ready, be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornets and the flute, the harp, the sekabut, the psaltery, and the dulcimer, and all kind of music, if you fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And listen to this statement which he should have never said. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hand? You know, he made a mistake here. He's going to find out very soon who is that God that is going to deliver them out of his hands. But he gave them an opportunity to make a choice. You either fall down when you hear the sound. If you're going to fall down, well, it's fine. I'm going to let you go. But if you're not going to fall down, you are going to be cast into the burning fiery furnace. And this expression, who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hand? He was really challenging God to see whether that God is able to deliver them out of his hand. Exodus chapter 5 this time, just the same like Nebuchadnezzar needed to learn who is that God. Also, by the way, there was another king, Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, also have challenged Moses. Many times was saying, for example, Exodus chapter 4 and verse 23, Moses said, "I say unto you, let my people go, that he may serve me, and if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn." But you see, Pharaoh did not take seriously the call of God to let Israel go out of Egypt. And notice in chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, "And afterward Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, thus says the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness." And then notice, "And Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go." You see, there is a defiance. Who is that God? I do not know him. I do not know him. And I'm not going to listen to him. I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go. I'm not going to do so. There is an element of defiance, of pride. I do not believe in this God, and neither will I let the people of Israel go. Well, it's the same thing, beloved, what Nebuchadnezzar has said here in chapter 3 and verse 15 of the book of Daniel. Who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hand? In other words, I do not believe that he is able to deliver you out of my hand. And so, if we just sum up these passages up till verse 15, that what we have learned from these chapters so far, I just want to kind of summarize a little bit what we have studied up to now. You see, Nebuchadnezzar apparently, even after he had gone through the experience of the image and the interpretation of the image that Daniel had given to him, apparently Nebuchadnezzar really hadn't come to a point that he was broken before that God. Apparently he did not come to a point that he recognized that there is only one true and living God, And Nebuchadnezzar apparently was still self-sufficient. He doesn't need anyone. He can do it on his own. And so what does he do? By building that great huge image, which was approximately 90 feet high and 9 feet wide, what was he really saying? He's saying, I am the master, I'm the captain. I'm going to do things my way. I'm going to run the affairs of the future kingdom. My kingdom will never have an end. And you can see the pride in this man. And you know what the Bible tells us? That pride comes before fall. And what the Bible teaches us many times, and we need to learn that lesson in our own life as believers, that God said to us, humble yourself under the mighty hands of God, and He will exalt us in due time. Peter and James speak about it. God resists the proud, but He gives grace unto the humble. Well, apparently Nebuchadnezzar, in his pride, built that image, gathered all the great men, the leaders of Babylon, brought them into one location and commanded them not only to dedicate the image, but to fall down and worship that image. In the same location happened to be three Jewish young men who were the leaders at that time, had been placed in such a high position, but they were faithful to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And you know, it is so interesting here that there are two things that we learn in the Bible. On the one hand, God gave a command to obey the rulers of this world. Romans chapter 13 and other passages tell us that we are commanded to obey the governors, the kings, the rulers of this world. But on the other hand, God also gave another command that we are not to obey or to worship any other gods. Well, they had to make a choice. They're either going to obey the king, or they are going to obey the God who have chosen them. And they made a choice to obey the greater, to obey a God rather to obey the king. Why? Because the king abused his power and have gone away from the will of the Lord. And for this, they accuse that they do not regard the king, that they do not serve the gods of the king, and that they do not worship the image that the king had made. So this statement, who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Well, he is going to find out that this one, the true and living God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Can we say amen to that?